Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast. This program is supported by San Juan Health Partners Urology, providing a wide range of personalized services for the whole family, including children. Our caring professionals are dedicated to helping meet your urology health needs with skill, experience, and service you need. For a complete listing of our services and to learn more, visit sanjuanhealthpartners.com or call 505-609-6300. San Juan Health Partners Urology, a division of San Juan Regional Medical Center. Program. A special good morning to our viewers who are watching us on the KSJE Facebook page and YouTube channel. Welcome aboard, everybody. My guests in the studio with me this morning are from the CASA program here in San Juan County. That's court-appointed special advocate. CASA advocate coach Keba Gorman is here. Good morning. Thanks for being here.
Yes, good morning.
Also joining us here in the studio is Becky Adams, a volunteer supervisor. Becky, good morning to you.
Good morning, Scott.
And joining us also is Ashley Lovato, the CASA intern who is going to school at New Mexico Highlands University. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Thank you all for coming in this morning to talk about CASA, which I, as I mentioned, is the court advocate program. And Keba, let's talk to you because, again, coming up shortly in April is the latest CASA training. So folks want to get involved. This is the time to consider doing it, right?
Yes, the sooner the better. If you'd like to sign up and would like to meet with us, we ask that you reach out to us so we can have a first interview and just try to get to know you and to see the different facts that you know about CASA and what interests you in our program. So the sooner you reach out, the sooner we can get the process started.
Right, and a lot of folks may have heard us talking about CASA before or heard it being talked about in the community, and so remind us again what the role of a CASA volunteer is.
So a CASA, of course, like you said, is a court-appointed special advocate. We are a trained advocate to advocate for a child who's in the system for an abuse and neglect.
Got it. And to be a volunteer, I need to be 18?
You would have to be 21.
21. Yes. I always miss that part. Yes. Thank you.
So 21 years old, you have to pass a background check. So that's why we encourage you to come early so we can get the background started. There is the whole training that starts on April 2nd is a whole 6 days. And there are evening trainings and one Saturday. And it's a total of 30 hours. And on top of that, once you've completed, it's 5 hours of court observation.
Okay. And that's what's all involved to get started.
To get started, yes.
Right. And then, Becky Adams, let me ask you a little bit about the volunteers when they do get started, because you ask them to kind of make a commitment, right, to being a volunteer and seeing their cases through if they're able to?
Yes. We ask them to commit to 1 year of serving as an advocate. Some of our cases go on longer than that, but at least that gives some stability for the children that are involved in the case. And we ask that they be able to volunteer about 8 to 10 hours a month. On an average, that's about what it would take to be a volunteer.
And those volunteer hours can be visiting with the child, visiting with the family, or doing some court things. It just depends on what's going on with that case, I suppose.
Yes, that includes visiting, like you said, with the child in its placement, visiting with parents, foster parents, visiting with teachers.
Right.
Because educational advocacy is a big part of our advocacy for the child. Then we include writing court reports and then attending the court hearings.
Right. And those court hearings are scheduled fairly in advance, months in advance or weeks in advance, I would think, aren't they? So you can kind of schedule around those types of things if you are committing yourself to being a volunteer?
Yes. We have, in fact, right now, we have part of them that are scheduled up into August.
Okay.
That we know about. Of course, there's always those occasions where they might be alteration in scheduling. to either move a hearing or a meeting up or back. But we try to let the volunteer know as soon as possible, and that way hopefully they can make those meetings, and if not, a supervisor is always attending.
Right. Got it. And Kevin, talk to me a little bit about the volunteers. Again, we mentioned 21 years or older, but it could be anybody that wants to really help these children, and these children could be any age as well, correct?
Yes. So, of course, we can deal with a child who is a newborn all the way up to 18. So it varies, and some people, after you complete your training, we do ask what your preference is. If you feel like you are connected to an older child, maybe a preteen or a teenager, we definitely try to pair, or else if they're younger. But, of course, we just don't know what the situation could be, and so we definitely ask everybody to be opened. But we do try our best to try to pair, and we give our volunteers the opportunity to actually review the case before they're actually assigned to make sure that they're comfortable with taking it. So that's also another kind of a match.
Right. Because you kind of want that to stick, don't you? You really don't want to have to reassign a child with another volunteer if it's not a good match from the beginning. And so you try to fix that from the start.
Right. Yeah. We definitely don't want to be that swinging door. The classes are there to, of course, be that one person that the child can always count on. Definitely somebody who is very committed and wants to make a difference. Those are the volunteers we'd like to have because, you know, we don't want our child to be disappointed. There's a lot of disappointments that they have to grow up and endure. So the less that we have to be part of it, the better.
Right. Indeed. And we talked a little bit about the one-year commitment, but many times these court cases may go longer than a year, and many times I imagine your volunteers want to stay on longer than the year to see the case through, and that's their option, I suppose, is it not?
Yes. Yeah, so of course, a lot of times what happens is the relationship builds, and unfortunately, we have cases that do go longer. We've had cases that have gone 2, 3, 4, 5 years.
It just
happens. It's unfortunate, but it does happen. So, I mean, it is their choice, and we like to have them, and they're usually fairly good about understanding, and they do stay committed. So, and if we ever have burnouts and stuff, that's what us CASA staff is there for, to help with remotivation, anything that we could do to step in to help, any meetings that we could be part of visits with them, just to give them some ideas how to continue interacting. So we definitely are support to them.
Right. And I know a lot of folks who consider being a CASA volunteer maybe get a little intimidated by the whole court thing and appearing in court and being this advocate for the child, but that's what the training is all about, right? To give these volunteers the tools that they need to take over this very important job.
Yes. So we are very fortunate as well because of a lot of our presenters are everybody that we see in the court system, like the respondent attorneys, the general Deb, the county manager of CYFD.
Right,
okay. She's there. Placements, they're all there. So they are all the GALs. Everybody who we see in the court is actually part of our training to make presentations. So the CASAs are able to kind of get to meet them and see them and see what their roles are. So they definitely don't feel uncomfortable because they have seen everybody at that time. And so when they enter the courtroom, it still is intensive, but it's not. They see everybody, so it's a little bit of an ease.
Sure, exactly, and that's what we're talking about. Let me turn to Ashley Lovato, who's the intern at CASA from New Mexico Highlands. And I know we talked to you in the fall, Ashley, right, about your experiences with CASA and some of your coursework. This must work really well with what you're studying at New Mexico Highlands, correct?
Correct. I'm also a CASA volunteer as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I have my own case.
So. Right. And so how's it been so far? I know you can't talk about specifically about the case, but is it everything that you were expecting it to be with the training and that was helpful for you?
Yes, it is. The training did prepare me for my CASA case.
Right. And so your semester is coming up. You mentioned you'll be graduating in May, I suppose, right?
Correct.
So congratulations.
Thank you.
And so what will be next after that? Will you hope to continue being a CASA volunteer or being an intern?
I am going to continue with my CASA case and continue with the CASA volunteer, and I'm looking forward to applying for my master's degree in social work with New Mexico Highlands as well.
Very, very good. And so as an intern, what were some of the things that you were doing? That wasn't part of your CASA volunteering. That was separate, was it not?
Yes, it is.
Gotcha.
I would attend the family center meetings and treatment team meetings. I would also help with just filing and
Intern stuff, yes. Right. But important intern stuff, I would imagine, to keep the office rolling and keep it working. So
knowledgeable stuff.
Exactly. And things you can learn from, right?
Yeah.
And that's great. And you have kind of that educational component, because I know you've offered service learning credit for students here at San Juan College. You could also take advantage of this too, correct?
Yes. So if you are interested, we do reach out to San Juan College students who need service learning hours. The opportunity is to attend any of our sessions at pre-service training. All we ask is that the student give us a call so that way we can kind of have them come to our office and review their paperwork, see how many hours are needed, and also decide which day they're going to attend so that way we can actually know how many people are going to be present on the day of the presentations, and so we have enough handouts, enough seatings, and also just to kind of hear their feedback as to, you know, would they like to pursue CASA even further at that point too.
Right, right. And the training, of course, for anyone else interested in being a CASA volunteer will start on April the 2nd, correct?
Yes. And this year, we actually changed locations.
Okay.
Last fall, we were at San Juan United Way Conference Room. We are actually changing. We are moving over to the Riverstone Church. The address is 808 North Monetary Avenue, and that's on in Farmington, of course.
In Farmington, right. Mm-hmm. Very good. And it'll give you a little more information on 808 North Monterey Avenue in Farmington, the Riverstone Church. And yes, that gives you a little more room, maybe, to spread out and have your trainings?
Yes. Yes, Becky is very fortunate. She's the one that got it organized for us, so it's just a lot more room and less noise. And I mean, the other was great, but we were just growing out of it, which is a great, you know,
great problem to have, yeah. I suppose, if you're growing, right? That means you're getting a lot more volunteers.
We are. We get a lot of more volunteers, and also a lot of other people coming to our trainings to actually get professional training.
Great.
So we definitely open it up if we have the room, and so now this is just going to give everybody the more opportunities.
Terrific. And again, I think we were talking before we came on the air this morning that your CASA volunteers and your cases is about above 90%, is it not, of the number of people you'll be able to assign to a CASA volunteer?
Yes, we are about 96%.
96%.
Yeah, so, but of course that can always change.
With new cases coming through, I suppose. That's true.
Yes, we never know. So we could be 96 and lower, or you could be at 100%, and we just don't know.
Right.
That's why it's always important to continue recruiting for anybody who wants to be part of our program.
Well, that's true. And anything less than 100%, I'm not a math guy, but I know that means there's still some children that don't get the volunteer that they need for their advocacy.
Yes.
And that's been what this program is all about since its very beginnings, is to have, I mean, I know the child has someone in court that represents them, but the advocate is someone even more so to advocate on their behalf throughout all the processes in the court system, correct?
Yes, we definitely are there to be a support, to make sure that they're, of course, just like their GALs. Their GALs are actually the others that are with them in court. That's the attorney for the youth.
That's the guardian ad litem. Is
guardian
that
the name?
See, I've learned something from our interviews over the years.
Yes.
So
CASA, of course, is just to visit in placement, make sure that they're comfortable, make sure everything is going well for them. If there's anything that we can help comfort or support them in our advocate side of things, we definitely do so. So, I mean, that's our part, is to just make them feel comfortable and give them the attention that they truly, you know, are seeking for.
Exactly. That's true. And Becky, let me ask you too about these reports that the volunteers are making, because I know they spend time doing that, and the judges appreciate that insight, do they not? Because it gives them a little additional perspective of what's going on for that child?
Yes. We are able to paint a picture of where the child is, how they are doing in their placement, and also be able to recommend whether perhaps the parents are ready for them to return home or not, how even the parents are doing on their treatment plan or their case plan. So this is one of the major things that the volunteer does, is writing that report to the court. The supervisor is there to help, though. We always, especially on the first court report for the volunteer for this case, we meet with them and we kind of prepare that court report together. But the judges always appreciate that, and they love the pictures of the children also. We usually try to provide that so that they can put a face to the child's name and to their situation.
Right. And I know the judges appreciate that, right? They definitely do.
Yes, and they do. They read the reports. They ask us about the information in it sometimes. They talk about the recommendations. And those recommendations that we make are part of the court hearing that day. They are put on the record. And the judge usually asks, okay, you know, have all your recommendations been satisfied? So they do listen to those court reports.
Right. Very good. My guest this morning from the CASA program here in San Juan County, that's court-appointed special advocate. We are talking about the need for more CASA volunteers, and the training is coming up. Gosh, it's just a little over a month away here as we talk on the 1st of March on this Friday morning. And so let's take a short break, and when we come back, more with my guests in just a moment right here on KSJE.
This program is supported by San Juan Regional Medical Center, who's expanding its services to offer low-cost blood screenings all year round, now offering walk-in convenience to get the blood tests you want when you want them. MyLabs, patient-ordered testing, is available in Farmington at the hospital's laboratory and the Outpatient Diagnostic Center on 30th Street. Also in Aztec at San Juan Health Partners Family Medicine at 120 Llano Street. With nearly 20 tests available, there's an option for everyone. MyLabs, patient-ordered testing, a wellness service of San Juan Regional Medical Center.
Friday morning here on KSJE, and you're listening to the Scott Micklin Morning Program. Good morning, everybody, and thank you for tuning in. And thanks to those of you who are watching us this morning, our visual radio program on the KSJE Facebook page and YouTube channel. My guest this morning from the CASA program here in San Juan County, as I have mentioned, we have a CASA intern from the office. Ashley Lobato is here from New Mexico Highlands University. Again, good morning. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good to see you. And also, Becky Adams is here. She's a volunteer supervisor for CASA. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
And also joining us here in the studio is Kevin Gorman, who is the advocate coach for the CASA program. Good morning to you.
Yes, good morning.
Good to have all of you with me this morning to talk about the CASA program, all the great work that it does in the community. And again, the timing for your visit is because the training is coming up on April the 2nd, and that's just a little over a month away. And so folks are thinking about it, considering it, maybe thought about it, somebody told them about it, now would be the time to call CASA and get the application packet, start filling that out and getting it turned back in time to get ready for this training. And so if folks do want to call, what would the number be to give you guys a call, the office?
So you want to call 505-325-5358, and you'll get the Child Haven message.
Answering service,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And you're going to want to select 6, and that's going to direct you straight to CASA, and it's actually going to ring all of our phones. So if I'm not at my desk, Becky's on our desk, Amy's on our desk, somebody should be there. If not, please leave a message, and it comes straight to our phones and our emails, so we will definitely get back as soon as we get the message.
Okay. And it's that application packet that is really important that folks start to fill out and get turned back in before the training, because you guys have to do certain things with the individual, like background checks and this and that, to kind of get them ready to go for the training.
Yes. We definitely would like all of our applicants, if possible. I mean, it's not rare. We will still take somebody at the end if that's just a last decision.
Sure.
But we do ask, just for the one simple reason, is that we need to get everybody registered for fingerprints to know that they can pass the background check. Unfortunately, we've had the situation to where some Somebody didn't pass the background and they went through the 30 hours of training, and then in the end we couldn't use them, because if you don't pass the background check, that just doesn't clear you to be around children and families. So it's very important, if you get the process started, the sooner the better.
Right. And again, the sooner the better, as you mentioned. And so the number, one more time, if you don't mind repeating it for us all.
Yeah, it's 505-325-5358, and please select 6.
That's the number to select and get you the application information to become a CASA volunteer. And again, you have to be 21 years or older.
Yes.
And willing to give about 8 to 10 hours a month. Is that kind of the rolling figure that we come up with?
Yes.
For things. And so, good. And so let's talk a little bit about the training, because I want to ask you about that, because as you mentioned, it's fairly extensive. It's how many hours again?
It's 30 hours.
30 hours of training, but you have it scheduled for after work hours, so if someone was working full-time and still wanted to be a volunteer, they could fit the training into their schedule. And I know we've talked before that many employers are pretty generous when someone comes and says, hey, I need a few hours off today to go to a court case for my CASA volunteer work. A lot of employers are very generous in allowing them to do that,
yes,
their workers. And so the training starts off and covers all different types of things, right? Take me through it a little bit.
So,
Amy? Or Becky, I'm sorry. Amy's not here, but should be here, but will be here maybe later on. But Becky, you've done some of these trainings, right?
Yes.
Kevin's done one.
Yeah.
So talk to us a little bit about the training.
Yes. We cover a lot of the different areas that the advocate will be facing, such as the different systems through the CYFD, different people they will meet, the permanency planning workers, the investigators. We go through the hearing timeline, and also the way that the child will move through the legal system. We cover a lot of that. We talk about domestic violence issues, mental health issues. We have experts across the community that come and present on many of these cases, these situations, these topics. And then we also cover things like the court report,
right,
confidentiality. We actually have on Saturday, we work a case. We have a example type case that we have the trainees work through. And then we use that to kind of simulate a court report. Although we'll be working with the advocate on that first report or two, or as many as they need.
Sure.
Still, we want them to realize the basic information that they're going to be gathering. So these are just some of the topics that are covered.
Right.
And like Kevin mentioned, it is 5 evenings spread across 2 weeks, and then one full Saturday.
Got it.
That we go through this information.
But I imagine that's very helpful for a lot of the new volunteers to see kind of how the case then works its way into the report and what you pull from that information into the report that goes on to the judge.
Yes, yes. Although sometimes by the time they get to the first report, they're going, I have no idea what I'm doing. So that's okay.
That's when they
that's
call
okay.
you, right? Or Keba,
yes.
Or any other staff members.
The supervisors sit with them and go through it and help them to plug all the information that they have gathered into that report.
And I always think that's really important for folks to understand if they're thinking about doing this, because it's such great work in the community, but they may seem a little overwhelmed or intimidated again, but there's such a great support system from all of you, even the other volunteers, I suppose, that can be available to help if somebody does have a question, if they're just getting started and really want to know what to do in a certain situation. I mean, you all, I think, are available almost 24/7, are you not?
Yes. In fact, we have, you know, we have our emails, but we also have our phones. We give the person our phone number. So basically, if they were to need us, they could call us 24/7, 365.
Right.
We ask them to respect that, but we are available for whatever they need.
If folks have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. Well, great. And I want to go back to Ashley a little bit to talk a little bit about your past, if you don't mind, because you were in the foster care system growing up, right?
Correct. I was in foster home for about 4 years of my life.
Okay. And you did not have a CASA volunteer.
No, I did not.
Assigned to your particular case. And so learning and seeing what you've seen from being involved with CASA, tell me a little bit about your impressions. Do you see how maybe that could that have helped you in your situation?
I do. I think it would have been beneficial to me if I would have had a CASA volunteer, so that way I could have told the CASA what I felt and what I was wanting in my situation,
right,
where I wanted to be.
Right. And so for children that don't have that, we've talked about the 96%. That means there's still some children that don't have a CASA volunteer. So again, I imagine you can see maybe that that would be nice to have 100%.
Yes, it would be great to have the 100%.
Based on your upbringing and your past, right, and your experiences. And so has this kind of prompted you for your line of work and line of education? Is this why you're getting into this field of work, a little bit about giving back in your childhood?
Yes, the reason why I chose the social work was to give back, because I know how it feels to be on the other side, and I want to be the child's voice.
Right, right. Well, good luck to you again, and thank you for sharing that with us this morning.
Thank you.
You bet. And what are some of the other questions you get from the potential volunteers? Do they just are not sure about the time commitment or sticking with it? Or what do you hear from them when they do have questions?
Well, a lot of the times it is, how long do I have to visit for? So we do ask that you visit for at least an hour. And if you would like to stay any longer and there isn't any plans with the foster family or intervening with anything else planned, we do ask that you're more than welcome to spend more time if you'd like, and if the child is willing to actually sit there and visit with you as well.
Right.
And then the other thing is, well, can I have a case in Farmington, you know, because we serve San Juan County. And so it's not a guarantee thing. Foster families could be in, you know, Aztec, Bloomfield, Kirtland, like just different areas. And so we definitely tell our volunteers it could change. And sometimes there's a disruption in placement, and that can change again. So we just tell them, like, the location is definitely something that's never promised. So those are the two biggest things. And then, of course, what if I can't make a day that's here on the pre-service training? So we don't tell anybody, oh, you have to be there. We would like you to be there because, I mean, it is very, very important, for one. But if you have to miss a day, say you have a class or you just had, like, you know, night shift or something, we do a one-on-one makeup. But, of course, that is at their own pace. So that kind of holds them back, especially for somebody who is eager to get started and have their own case. That could be a barrier, but we definitely do, you know, sit down and do a makeup because, you know, they've at least attended five different days, so they're committed at that point.
Right, right.
And then, of course, history background. Well, what if I have this that's going to hold me back? You know, and we always tell them, if you have any past paperwork that says that, you know, your charges or anything like that were dismissed, we do submit that with the background. But ultimately, it's not up to us to pass background checks. It is up to Children, Youth, and Family. That's where our backgrounds come from.
They're the ones that are doing the,
yes,
the check and give you the final, I guess, thumbs up or thumbs down.
Yes, they'll give us a letter that tells them whether they're eligible or not eligible.
I see.
So, and those are good for at least 4 years, and then we'll do another one, and that's a national CASA regulation.
Right. And I mentioned a lot of some of the things that you do or don't do are covered by some of these regulations, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're really driven by what has worked in other places and for years and years.
Yes. Yeah. So, of course, everything, our training is national. And CASA is throughout, of course, the United States. So there are multiple programs in New Mexico. And so we have to follow a certain curriculum when it comes down to training. So this isn't just something we do. Some people say, oh my gosh, this is a lot of material, because when you get signed up, you get handed a three-ring binder. And it's, I believe, about 400 pages. And some people say, do I have to read all this? And we say, no, no, no. We ask them to review it, at least read the first chapter, after. So when we get started, you kind of know which direction we're going to start out in.
Right.
The first day is introduction to kind of learn more about CASA and what the foundations are of CASA. And then, of course, you get to meet an investigator, and they kind of tell you how a case actually gets started. And then on, from the days after, we start growing on that. So, everybody thinks the material's crazy big, but what we also do is in the year, we do in-service trainings once a month.
Mm-hmm.
So if we find different resources in the community, and we kind of educate our volunteers about other services that they can take advantage of, and tell their families or anybody else in the community that needs these assistance. If we don't have any programs set up, what we do is we go back to our training binder and we pick something that we would like to kind of refresh our minds on, and so we are constantly looking back into the binder, so it isn't something that's just a one-time deal, so we definitely refer back to it.
I see. Well, and again, it's important that folks know they have that support and that training as they're going into this very important volunteer position to advocate on behalf of a child. And and again, they're signed up for about a year, but many stay longer to see the cases through. And we've talked a little bit about those reports that are made and filed, and so the judges appreciate all those, that insight, right?
They do. They definitely sometimes, you know, we it's not uncommon for somebody to say, I read CASA reports before I read anything else, because in the end, sometimes CASAs know a little bit more than others. And so sometimes we get people that reach out to us and say, hey, you know, am I missing anything? Can you tell me more? CASAs are really good about emailing everybody, the team, just to kind of give updates so everybody stays on the same page. But in reality, CASAs see the children more often than anybody else. So that's why we have a little bit more information. So it is beneficial.
True. We talked a little bit about the guardian ad litem who represents the child in the court case, but many times they have not just that one case, right? They're dealing with how many cases at a time, would you say? It's a lot, isn't it?
It's a lot.
Okay.
I don't know what the number is, but it's certainly a lot. And so we definitely don't want it, our CASAs, to feel like they're just another name. So then that's another thing that's also beneficial, is to being a CASA, is they feel like somebody is interested, somebody's showing up, somebody cares. And so that's kind of a neat thing to see. And then you'll also see the change in a child as they start to come around and they start to trust you and they start to open up to you. And that's success right there.
Right. Makes a big difference.
Yes,
I would think, for those children. And Becky Adams, in the minutes we have remaining this morning, I know there's a lot of children that are in need of CASA volunteers, as we've talked about. There are a lot of opportunities for folks to get involved, but I imagine it would be nice to have a nice diverse group of CASA volunteers, male and female and Hispanic and Native American and Anglo and all that, to be able to fit into what you are placing those children with these volunteers, right?
Yes. Being able to be aware of the culture of the child and be able to be the male figure that's strong in the child's life. These things are important, and so we do value diversity in our different volunteers. This last training, we were very fortunate to have three men that were able to take the course and be able to take cases. And it really helped because there are many of these children that do not see a father figure or a male figure in their life. Also, the cultural aspect, there are many cultures that we do serve, and being able to understand the culture of that child and be able to make sure that the diversity of that child is respected and that child is educated in their specific culture and needs.
Right. I noticed that part of the training includes a session on the Indian Child Welfare Act, which is another important piece of legislation that CASA volunteers should be familiar with and would be from the training, but important for them to know, because those children have certain protections than as opposed to other children because of this particular federal law.
Yes. There's even different legalities as far as the timeline that have to be respected when it's talking about an Indian Child Welfare Act case. There are many different things that have to be considered, so we appreciate people who do know the culture and then being able to take that piece and implement it into the case.
Right. Very good. Well, we are just about out of time, everybody, so I can't thank you enough for being here to talk about the CASA program and all the good that it does for children in our community. And we've heard some a personal story from you, Ashley, so thank you again for sharing that and the work that you are doing even as an intern and going to school, because I know you're going to get into this line of work when you've completed it. So good luck to you.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. The phone number again, if folks would like more information and to pick up the application packet, how can they get a hold of the CASA program?
Yes, they can reach us at 505-325-5358, option 6. That'll put them into the CASA office and we'll take care of them.
Okay. Very good. And again, you're looking for volunteers for the training that starts in about a month from now. Also, service learning here at San Juan College. If students are looking for an opportunity, this could fit into that as well.
Yes. Of course, you can always go to our Child Haven website as well, and you'll find all of our forms there as well. And then, of course, we don't have a lot of people on our Facebook page, so we are actually working on that too, so we can reach out and let everybody know what we're doing at the CASA program as
well. Okay, so they can check you out on Facebook, right? Yes. And the website, I believe, is childhavennm.org.
Yes, it is.
How we can find you on the internet. So wonderful. Thank you all for coming in this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us, Scott.
You bet.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the work that you all do. My guest from the CASA program, court-appointed special advocate here in San Juan County on KSJE. Back with more in just a moment, everybody. It's 8:56 KSJE, and it's time now to check in with Wally D. from Wally D. Sports to tell us all about prep sports this week, and things are getting down to the important games, right?
It definitely is.
These days.
A district tournament all this week's been going on.
Right.
Of course, Friday it's a girls championship in the area, and then tomorrow, and actually there are girls tomorrow also, but it's championship Friday and Saturday.
It is, and you tell me, the girls are what's really carrying the region, right? The only boys team that really is doing relatively well on their way to state, perhaps, is Navajo Prep.
Navajo Prep boys, yeah, they host their district tournament championship tomorrow. They actually finished second in the district, and they really should have finished first. They kind of had a little lapse in the middle, but they've really come back strong, and they will host through tomorrow at 6 o'clock at Navajo Prep. Through upset the number one seed last night.
Wow.
Which was Wingate. So Navajo Prep, you know, well on their way and should get a good seed in the state tournament.
Okay, go Eagles. But it's the girls that we're watching too, and they're the ones that are really keeping this somewhat interesting
right
this time, this part of the season.
Kirtland Central girls, number one in their district, also number one in the state, so they should get a number one seed going into the tournament.
Okay.
Their district tournament championships tonight against Gallup. Gallup's always a big rival for Kirtland, and that game's at 6 o'clock at Kirtland Central tonight. So, you know, lots of great basketball going on.
This will be the weekend to get out there, right, and to see some of these big games, because a lot riding on them.
Yeah, and then Navajo Prep girls are also tonight, their district tournament championship. They'll get a really good seed, probably, I would say, a 4 or 5 in the state tournament.
Okay, very good. And then, so again, the decisions will be made by Monday. We'll know, right?
By Monday. Should be sometime Sunday. Everybody will be glued to their computers on Sunday looking seeing where those at. And then you also got the Piedra Vista girls, who hosts their tournament championship tomorrow at 6:30. And, of course, I'll be bringing that game live on 107.9 Pirate Radio.
Okay.
Is where I broadcast that. And it'll be fun. It'll be West Mesa. And it's the number one and two teams in the state going against each other.
Nice. So should watch for something important there.
Yeah.
Right?
Definitely. And PV still, whether they win or lose, they still should get the number one seed, because they beat West Mesa in the regular season games twice, and that takes precedent over this tournament.
Right. Okay. So we'll see. And then things got to get ready for state, right?
Then state starts next week. Friday's the girls, Saturday's is the boys, and And then they go on to Albuquerque. They win that first round game. Then it's, you know, the eight teams right. left, and it'll be a long week of basketball.
Okay, so you're going to be filling up the car with lots of gasoline and getting tuned up, ready to go, because you'll be on the road here not too long.
Right. Well, I'll go down there and stay in Albuquerque for the whole week.
I know you don't commute back and forth.
Yeah, I've done that before, but
you don't want to do that.
It's a lot of driving. Went to Albuquerque last night. Farmington Girls, of course, they'll make the state tournament. Also, they lost to West Mesa last night. But they'll still make it into the top eight and should get to host a home game next Friday night.
Okay, so they could work their way back, perhaps.
Well, they should win their first round game and move on to Albuquerque. And what's crazy, I mean, in the second round, there's four teams from that district that are so solid. And they've already played each other like three times already. And then they get to the state tournament in the quarterfinals, they may see each other again.
True. Interesting. Okay. Well, rivalries, right?
Rivalries, exactly.
That's how it'll work. All right. Well, keep us up to speed, Wally, won't you?
I definitely will. And, of course, hopefully we'll get to see the state tournament here in a couple of weeks. Be on live with you from there.
We'll connect with you. You can't escape us. So we'll find you wherever you are down there. So very good. And your Facebook page, and folks can see some of the interviews and things that you do.
Wally D Sports.
Right.
And and we try to do interviews with the coaches before the games. We don't always get them. Sometimes they're busy or crazy or whatever. But we do usually get interviews, and we usually post the games that we broadcast and everything. So
check it out, everybody. Okay, very good. Wally, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Have a good weekend. It'll be a busy one.
Busy.
Again, for you. That's Wally D from Wally D Sports. He's with me on Fridays to talk about prep sports here on KSJE Farmington. Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.